everybody. Welcome to Pep Talks. And we are live on Facebook, and we are also going to be on SoundCloud tomorrow, but live on Facebook. Hello, Facebook world. Hope everybody's having a good day. We have a special guest today, and we also have Steve Lally back from
a month tour.
And we have the comedian Carmen Morales here.
Hi.
Oh, my God. We have a full... also, when bad people when bad people do good, what does that mean to you, Steve?
I thought we weren't going to even talk about it, but since you mention it,
yes,
since
Andy.
You bring it up, why when bad people do good, when good people do bad, when good people do bad,
I think it really comes down to people are complex and they don't just all do one or the other.
Thank you. You know, you're already a valuable guest. You're already a valuable guest because me and Steve get caught in rabbit holes, I think, of too much thinking. Mm-hmm. And you're a person who cuts through all that bullshit.
Yeah, that was a good first moment.
Yeah. Because like Bill Cosby, right?
Oh, you're talking about bad people that make cool shit.
Well, no.
You're talking about bad people
doing good. What were you thinking?
Well, you said bad people that do good.
Yeah.
So I think that's like, say somebody hit a puppy or something with his car and then he starts donating a bunch to charity because he feels bad.
Oh.
That's like a bad, like, you know, you do bad and you make up for it by doing good. Like,
well, if it wasn't intentional to hit the puppy, then you really.
What if it was? That's what
if
I mean.
If it was intentional,
yeah. It's like, fuck
if you
that
are
puppy.
Hitting, if you are hitting a puppy with a car intentionally, you should probably not be free on the streets. Right?
Clearly, this is a very abstract philosophical question that we're delving into in this new format of Pep Talks.
Good to have you back, Steve.
Yeah, good to be back. Good to be back with you, Eddie.
Carmen, he was gone for a month. Doing the
is
road.
That all?
Yes, and that's what I wanted to get Carmen's perspective. She is, you called yourself a road dog.
It's
and
true.
I'm not a road dog, but you and Steve are somewhat. Well, Steve does it once a year, is it?
Twice a year. About
twice a year. Go ahead.
I had to slow down, like, because I used to do it all the time. Like, I didn't live anywhere. I used to live out of a Saturn SC2.
A lot of comics do that, by the way, Eddie. That's not uncommon. A lot of working headliners do that. They don't have a residence. Your buddy Tom Rhodes didn't have a place to live, remember?
He didn't live in his car, though.
Well, I mean, I'm abroad. You know what I mean? I'm non-threatening. People don't think I'm going to kill him or rape him, so I get put up pretty easy. Pretty easy to be on the road as a chick.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sometimes it gets a little sketch, you know? Like, I just recently paid $27 for an Airbnb, and a guy left a turd in the toilet. But other than that, yeah.
That could be worse.
Yeah, it could be very much worse. I did sleep with the chair underneath the doorknob, though. Old school.
You did?
Yeah.
Because of a turd in the toilet?
No, but just because he was strange. Like, I didn't think he was going to rape me, but I think he was capable of murder. You know? That's all.
Oh, that's all.
Oh, yeah, that isn't bad.
It's easier to be a girl on the road, for sure.
Right, like, it's easier.
It's not always like that, but that's the most recent, funniest thing that's happened.
Mm.
And yeah. There was a lot of red flags that I also dodged. Like, he asked me if I could see well in the dark. He asked me to show him. Yeah, he asked me if I wanted to see his orchard. Like, there was plenty of opportunities
I
had.
Whenever anyone asks me if I want to see an orchard, I'm out of there.
You're out. That's your line.
He has because he has experience with that. He knows that's a signal. You know, it's like a code.
What was that great movie? Charlie Kaufman is one of the greatest.
Being John Malkovich.
Was it Being? No. Well, Being John Malkovich was one, but then there was another one he did that revolved around rare orchids.
Oh, that's that was Adaptation.
Adaptation. You know these movies?
Oh, I remember that with Nick Cage, right?
Yeah. Nicolas Cage was in it. He played twin brothers.
And another actor who I love who's disappeared. I think he's probably made enough money and said, fuck it, I don't need to do
this. Right, he moved down with the orchard was what he did.
But Charlie Kaufman, I just want to recommend to anybody if you... you know, Netflix, anything by Charlie Kaufman, or, you know, iTunes, you know, Apple iTunes Store, get a movie by Charlie Kaufman. They're all incredible. Adaptation, Being John Malkovich, Schenectady is an unbelievable.
I never saw that one.
I didn't like Schenectady.
I thought it was brilliant. And I think I'm a pretty, you know, good, gauge of what is good or not. And Schenectady.
I would imagine everybody thinks that they're a good gauge, though. And there are people that still
another
like
great
things.
Fucking comment.
Profound.
Thank you for getting me off right. my high horse. You know, I was, you know, I
bring the good guests. Don't forget that.
That's right.
Shit.
Steve brought Carmen. And I'm so out of it. I see Carmen at the Comedy Store every time I'm there. And I'm like, you work at the Comedy Store, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. You're one of those vague faces I see sometimes, right? Yeah.
Well, I was telling you that, you know, I really appreciate you at the Comedy Store because you're always like giving me encouragement and saying, oh, I love that bit last night, or I can't wait to see you go up.
Yeah.
And I need that because I
get excited.
It's awesome because I come into the Comedy Store just feeling all this competition because there are so many really good comics. Mm-hmm. Every night there, and I'm like,
lot of them come in and sit in the back when you go up because we all like to watch you.
Is that right?
Yes.
Hey, I didn't say it, and Steve brought Carmen, so this is why I'm saying.
You know what? She's a pretty good gauge. I think she's probably a pretty good gauge.
You know how you are about film and cinema? I'm kind of that way about stand-up.
I love stand-up, too. And, like, I watch – like, I'm one of the comedians who watches other comedians.
Do you
like,
really?
I get there early. Yeah, when I get there early for my spots, I sit in the back and watch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, a lot of the comics that I've seen are doing the same thing over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But it's incredible to watch that sometimes.
Well, that's what's great about you is you could do a bit, but it's never exactly the same.
Right.
Anytime. And I love that. Like, it's still organic enough that it like moves and changes and grows, and it's not like verbatim. Like,
he's watching comics and he's going to fucking talk. He's going to watch two or three comics and then he's going to go on and riff for 3 or 4 minutes off possibly what those comics
sometimes
said.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, and also the conversation you had in the car with me on the way to the fucking Comedy Store. He follows Rogan and opens and closes with the conversation
we had in the car.
Do you exactly.
Remember that?
What was that? He doesn't even remember.
That's
how prolific. Yeah, it was the 101, the people on the fucking 101.
Oh, yeah.
People should be forced to look at the traffic on the 101 just to know what life's like. That's what you open with. And you close with Roseanne Barr's just a distraction.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what you close with yeah, after yeah. going after. You know,
I'm telling the Comedy Store audience, you know, everybody's so mainstream. You know, I'm saying, hey, it was when Roseanne, that big news about Roseanne being fired and everybody losing, you know, and the whole show getting canceled because of her tweets. And I was like, it's just a distraction, folks, from Wall Street raping you and Wall Street, like the B&B thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Wall Street has America in a B&B with a turd in the toilet.
Right. How many comics would close with that at the fucking Comedy Store for the first time and then not remember they did
I think that's what's amazing. I'm not gonna figuratively blow you this entire podcast, but that's what's one great thing that's about you is you are free on stage, and a lot of people are not free. They're very much, they're very stringent, like strict. They take their structure to a whole nother, and you allow yourself, and I really admire that because I like to do that. And that's
you
how
like
I know.
To do that too?
Oh, yeah. If I had a brain injury, I would be fucked. I would have to start all over again. Because and whatever I'm doing,
I think a lot of people would have to start all over again after a brain injury. Is this the same guy who hit the puppy? Imagine this is the same dude. Like who hit the puppy intentionally.
You should have never mentioned somebody intentionally hitting a puppy. Because now Eddie's like,
I'm a big dog guy.
Yeah, that's like, you know.
But that's what I'm saying. You were saying good people who do bad things are bad people who do good things. And so a person who hits a puppy intentionally is probably a bad dude. But if they spent the rest of their life, if they had guilt and they started, you know, contributing and trying to help, like started building houses for the homeless and stuff like that, do you get to let them pass? Do you get them let them pass for the one dog?
Well, I think what you said is I think, and then we'll let Stevie jump in, but I think what you said is right, that we all have, like, I think we all have good and bad in us. You know what I mean? It's just that we don't act out a lot on it. Like some people are worse than others for sure. Like there's good and bad in all of us. And when someone commits a heinous act, you know, like a heinous act, you know, then, you know, they have to, you know, I just feel like our society of punishment, like just
draconian punishment for everything. Society just like casting out anybody who says the wrong thing, or you know, maybe does slips up and does the wrong thing. But then there's things that are unforgivable, like killing an animal intentionally is unforgivable. For me,
or
it's
killing
like
a family, like in Kansas,
or like the fucking of the poor, banks fucking foreclosing on poor people.
Yes,
You know, sending children off to die in the war. I mean, everybody has their own thing. For me, it's that fucking of the poor. You know, giving people hospital bills they can't pay. It's cheaper to die. You know, that corporations and shit like that. So everybody has different unforgivable stuff is what I'm saying. We all have our different.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing is everybody has a different version of morality, their version of morality. It's not all the same unless you're.
Well, I don't know about that. I think we. Yes, you're right. You're right. God, she's good, folks. I was going to challenge her and then I realized that, well, people do have different versions of morality, but I think we know intrinsically as people, and I'm talking to you, Facebook Live. Don't think I've forgotten that.
Hey
and
guys.
We are. That's just a gentle hey, guys, and that's nice.
This brings the ratings up when he talks directly to the audience. Don't forget, we haven't forgotten about you, Facebook Live. We care about you and what you think is sacred,
Mr. and Mrs. Facebook Live.
All five of you. What is unforgivable to you?
Wait a minute. I'm getting in that we're being attacked by Martians. Imagine if I drove the whole Facebook Live audience into
a frenzy.
We're being attacked by Martians.
Two people in Toronto committed suicide today. They were listening to the Eddie Pepitone podcast.
But I think we intrinsically know what's good and what's bad. Like, I always know when I'm doing a bad thing, you know?
You don't think that's taught? You think that's nature? You don't think that's nurture?
Oh, I think it's both. But yeah, if you haven't had, I didn't get a lot of nurturing. And you know that, folks. And I'll tell you something. You know, a lot of you know that I haven't had a lot of nurturing, yet a lot of you still don't support my career.
We should talk. Wait a minute. We should talk about the fucking letter you got while I was on the road. Did you talk about that at all?
No. We decided to just that it would be better not to talk about it.
Oh, you're right. You're right to let it go. I'm sorry.
I got a nasty letter. I think it was maybe one of two letters in my life that I've gotten from a.
We can't just rip them apart?
No. I just feel like it was just so full of vitriol.
It probably had nothing to do with you. If anybody's that mad at you for creating, then that's the whole. It's wrong. That's why it's like. That's why there's a difference between, say, the woman who was fired for her tweets, and Bill Cosby. Cosby's a bad dude.
Yeah. Well,
and it's not his art that's offensive. It's his actions as a human being that's offensive. And that's
right.
That's a big difference. To circle back to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
People who create good art that do bad things, the art is fine. The person is what needs work.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like Louis C.K. does great stand-up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if everybody would agree with that. But, you know, but what he did, it's terrible. But he doesn't deserve to be erased from people's consciousness forever.
Right.
Right. As a woman, what do you think about?
I'm also different as far as a woman goes because I've been through way worse.
Right. So I heard another woman talking about that.
Yeah. The
So what they were saying, like, you know.
It being so, like, the outcry part of it is the part that I think is, like, a little bit eye-rolly where that it's like, guys have always been trying to do heinous shit to us. And I mean, true. I've stopped sexual assault by telling a dude to get the fuck off me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can do that. And I think that it's more empowering to women to tell them that they are allowed to stop things like this happening as opposed to letting it happen. And then afterwards saying this thing happened to me, you know?
Right. But I guess some women are afraid to stop it because of how they were brought up and their, you know, if they were abused or.
Right. But that's my point is I was abused. I've been raped. I check all the boxes. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you can still stop it. Like, that's what I'm saying is like there's no psychology backing this, but there's a difference between having been victimized and living in the mentality of being a victim. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's like, I don't think everybody coming out, and because that's the other thing too, is like a lot of heinous shit that's happening is a lot of women don't want to come out because they don't feel comfortable about it because of all the shit that happens.
They blame themselves.
Shame.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah. They blame themselves.
And I don't think that helps either, because now these people are living in fear even more so from something, and because they shared with somebody that something happened, and now that person is putting all of their information on blood. Like, there's a lot of the outcry takes no consideration for the victim themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And, but having, it's also weird, like, I mean, I've had a dude try to, like, while I was sleeping, like, try to... try to like sniff my feet and shit like that, which is fucked up, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want that, but the guy's not touching me, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's fucked up, but it's not as traumatizing as somebody actually raping you. Like, I feel like there is a difference, and and women don't really want to talk about how that there is a spectrum of assault as well. You know, there's the catcalling on one end, and then there's the gruesome being held down awfulness on the other end.
Right.
And you can't treat all of them the same because they are not all the same.
Right. But there is an umbrella of behavior, you know, the Me Too movement. Just, you know, it's basically, you know, people should respect people, period.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah,
again,
human
it
beings.
Simplifies. You know, I just see you nodding.
That's well, I'm just
Rabbi Lolly is here, back from the road.
Well, you know what the Bible says. Fight don't fight flesh and blood, but powers and principalities.
Oh, nice.
So
that's a nice pull.
Yeah, so maybe this is an evening out. This whole movement is an evening out of energy that's been, like my friend Mark would say, that the women have been fucked over for so long.
That's why I just started raping dudes. I just started raping them back, you know?
And did they Me Too?
They don't like it. I mean, nobody said anything. I'm really adorable, though, so it's kind of hard, you know what I mean? I also don't have anything to lose, you know?
Yeah.
I'm on the Eddie Pepitone career track, so I don't really have...
Eddie, there's
a hear that, folks?
Oh, here we go. Yeah, tell them. They should know.
Do you hear that?
You should know that there are people who he has inspired to fail.
I actually now talk to the audience. You know, when I'm live, I'm like, I'm live with you guys. Now, are there any failures out there? Like, I just go to the audience, round of applause if you're a failure. And I talk about how I'm a failure, you know?
But you're not really a failure.
Yeah, I mean, it's all comparative. Like, it depends on who you compare yourself to.
Sure.
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just have to love myself. I have to nurture myself. I have to parent myself.
Yeah. Sure, man. Yeah.
I do.
I think there's a little too much.
You mean that, right?
I think there's a little too much self-love, though. Have you ever seen people that really...
No, I'm not talking about narcissistic self-love.
I know, but still, it's always like...
Not about taking selfies.
I think it's more self-acceptance than self-love.
Okay.
Maybe.
You know, she's fucking good.
You should let me book the guests from now on, Eddie.
Self-acceptance.
Yes, that makes way more sense.
Instead of self-love.
Self-love is just like, I mean, because think about it. If love is, in the most basic form, is a chemical reaction in our brain to make us procreate, everybody fucks themselves. You know what I mean? But when you self-acceptance means like, oh, you know, it's all right that my knee's got this weird thing on it, or it's all right that one tit's bigger than the other, or it's all right that I got a little chubberoo. You know what I mean? Like, all that, that's what makes you go through the day better. You know what I mean? Incapable of loving other people. It's not, it's a self-acceptance. It's like, this is where I'm at and I don't care. And that's fine.
This is where I'm at and I don't care. Or this is where I am at and it's fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't care what other people.
Oh, right.
Because that's really what it comes down to is.
Your face is funny. It's a fun. It's sort of like you're. Whenever I look at Steve, I feel like you're going.
I don't have anything profound to add to that.
Okay, yeah.
That's just perfect. You know, if I could have said it the right way, it would have been what she just said for you. You know, she knows you well for not knowing you well. She knows you pretty
well. Carmen has seen me perform a lot at the comedy. And I'm pretty open about what I go through, you know, in my podcast, in my, like, I talk about, you know, I have debilitating anxiety.
Panic
I went
attacks.
On Zoloft recently. I'm afraid of a lot of things. I want to make the transition from fear to faith. mm-hmm. in the world, yeah. you know. I talk about my, you
Which
know,
is a huge struggle because fear-mongering is the only way to market anymore.
That's right.
Yeah, it's the only way to market. Somebody's always yelling at us and somebody, that's why every single advertisement is at twice the volume of whatever it was that you were listening to or mm-hmm. watching. Mm-hmm. They're always yelling at us. They're always, I babysit this old lady, right? She was like, and I wouldn't say caretaking because I'm definitely not licensed, but I hang out with her. And daytime TV is just like, do you have any kind of pain ever? You're dying. Dying. You know, it's all the drug stuff that they're pushing. Mm-hmm. It's always like, oh, these people, are you sure you're safe in your neighborhood? Mm-hmm. Like, it's constantly, you need to be mm-hmm. anxious. Like, this society has made us feel like we are supposed to be anxious in order to be aware.
And I'll give you a little political, economic, historic background on that Steve is hip to, and you maybe as well. But our society, America, has just, you know, what's happened is the biggest transfer of wealth from working class, middle class people to the 1%.
Sure.
And the way that manifests is corporate wealth. You know, corporations take their jobs out of all these cities across the United States, and people who once had union jobs and union benefits and, you know, they could buy a house, now they're left like, what the fuck are they going to do? You know, and there's a few percentage of people who, you know, can find tech jobs, but there are so many people in America who are isolated and fearful because they don't have access to good jobs, you know.
The whole structure is falling apart. It's decomposing like the environment. I mean, the structure of our society is disintegrating, and people are still stuck in this 1950s TV advertising, you know, mentality. That the odd thing though that I find, especially when I go tour, is that people are desperately really trying to be well. They really want internal security, whether it's external security is what we're supposed to, like the Buddhists talk about this stuff, the external security is what's supposed to make your life better, but there's some internal security that can't buy. And when people come to my comedy shows, I feel like they're coming out. They don't fucking know me. Why do they come out on a Thursday night or a Friday night? They're coming out because they want to laugh and feel better. They want to feel better.
Yeah, they want heroin without the side effects. That's all we are. We are also a distraction, but we are a healthy distraction because it's good for our brain for us to laugh.
Okay, but check this. So what you do, because I've seen you do comedy, and I know your comedy, and I know my comedy. Why are people laughing at that? If people wanted to be afraid and paranoid, why would they be responding to Eddie Pepitone or Stephen Lally or Carmen Morales? My point is being there's a lot of faith to have there. That you're giving peace to people, and you're not giving peace to people by doing relationship jokes. You're elevating and lifting something off of people spiritually by telling them the way things are and making them laugh. That's a very hopeful thing. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that's my, if there's any positive message there. And I just was touring, and there's people who are not supposed to be in my audience, like millennial, you know, yuppie type people, and they're coming up and, oh man, you're so funny. And I would never think those people would like my comedy, and they dig it, you know? And so it's strange to me. I had a black Trump supporter trying to talk to me for a half hour after a show.
You should have taken a picture of him.
I should have. I was trying to get
laid. I don't know if there's many of those.
I think there's four.
I was eyeing the girl at the bar. Yeah. Not in the South. There's more. But, you know, anyway, that's my point.
And I also want to go back to the Me Too movement is also created awareness of everybody to see how vast. So a lot of women also don't feel like they're the only person that's had anything horrible happen to them. So I think it's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think that now that we've gotten to this point where the can is open and we can see all of this, the monster behavior, that moving forward, you have to be able to gauge that these things are very different. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. The guy I read, Chris Hedges, and I've talked about him ad infinitum on this podcast, he says that at the basis of everything, we need economic justice. Economic justice. If we have economic justice for people, everything will fall into place. In other words, if people across the board are taken care of economically, then we have community and everything will kind of spring
from that. Just community, but then it's community not just in church. Because like that's
absolutely.
There's a lot of people that go to church that don't really
Why are they going?
For the community.
Yeah.
They go for the community. There's a group of people. Hey, we are all basically, we all agree on a morality. That's fine. I mean, some of it's a little gray, but it's fine. Like we all still come on Sunday and we look at other people and we hug them and we shake their hands and
we sing together.
Yeah, we sing together. There's a unify. I mean, that's part of why religion has existed this long and this kind of religion, you know?
It's community and ritual. We have ads and
great
these are,
time for an ad.
Oh, this is great.
This is a great time for an ad. Steve, you're just back, so why don't you read this?
Oh, wow, Eddie. One. I can't even believe the honor of being able to tell you about Amerisuites.
Amerisuites.
I don't even think this is my first time reading an ad for Amerisuites.
By the way, these are real ads written by our producer.
For you,
Matt Rossomoto.
That's right, Matt.
Matt Rossomoto.
Awesome. Tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato. He's Matt Rossomoto.
No one sees more of this grand old U.S. of A. than a traveling comedian. Thank you, Eddie. We see more cities, small towns, and roadside stops than nearly any other profession. I'll tell you, I've stayed in some very questionable places, but that's why I like Amerisuites. At Amerisuites, I know what I'm getting. Even the shadiest of motels will curl an eyebrow when you try to check in with a 14-year-old morphine-enriched road trophy. And listen, whatever unspeakable shenanigans we get up to with a shower curtain rod and a bedside Bible our business. I don't need another cleaning lady screaming about how the drain is clogged with flesh. I've heard it all 1,000 times and in every language. At Amerisuite, they know what's up. They have family-sized rooms with separate and spacious sleeping quarters, a perfect size for a quick game of stab and seek, and a staff that know better than to ask questions or have a direct eye contact. Whenever I'm on tour, I don't downsize. I Amerisize.
I just want to break that down for you. And thank you, Amerisuites, for believing in us here at Pep Talks. I want to break that down. Those ads are written by a serial killer.
That's Amerisuites,
all. That's
the
all.
Official hotel of serial killers.
Yeah, that's what the tagline should be, Rossomoto, you know, Amerisuites, if you're a serial killer.
The next Joker movie is actually about a comic who loses his shit and becomes the Joker. It's based on he becomes a serial killing, the Joker, you know, the next Joker movie.
That's the character was already in the Watchmen.
No, he's being played by Joaquin Phoenix.
And what's the premise here?
The Joker is an ex-comic, a failed comic or something, who loses his shit, and that's how he becomes the Joker. He ends up on a homicidal rampage.
Why didn't they call you for that?
I've had that idea. Right.
How many of us have had that idea?
Exactly. Did you hear that? That movie got cast without
you.
Sniff.
Yeah, that's right.
Of me. Because
Hollywood doesn't know shit.
Hollywood doesn't know shit, and they want a big name. They want a bankable name, and I certainly am not bankable.
But you would be great in that.
I would be better than him.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Well, he's a good actor.
Yeah, but, you
know. Isn't
he? He played the fucking guy falling in love with his iPhone. Fuck that guy.
Oh, yeah? Was that a shitty movie?
That was just yuppie art shit.
Oh, it was?
Crap.
I didn't see it.
Fucking yuppies creating art for each other.
We also have phone calls, folks, and listen, leave us a message for the podcast at 424-262-0904. Leave us a message at the podcast, 424-262-0904. And we had a couple of messages. Let's go to this first one. Here we go.
Hi, Eddie and Steve. This is Liz and Jed again from San Francisco.
Hi.
We're your biggest fans.
Yeah, we love you. We like Steve. And just like you, we love animals, but we've noticed something very concerning here in San Francisco.
So we don't know what to do because there are some dogs that seem like they don't have enough warm winter clothes. They're not wearing sweaters.
There's no sweaters.
No scarves. They don't have those little dog sunglasses, and we're really concerned about the state of our country.
No doggy sunglasses and sweaters. So thanks, Eddie.
What should we do? Help.
We love you, Eddie.
Bye.
I love those guys. Liz and Jed, was it?
Yep, Liz and
Jed. My mom's boxer wears doggles because she's got like a little convertible car, and he rides in the front, and he's got his little doggles on, and he looks so damn cute.
Yes, we just had to get one of our doggies. He scratched his cornea.
Yikes. Oh, no.
Whoa. And yeah, it sounds worse than it. He's better now, but for 2 weeks.
He had to have the thing, right?
Well, we had to put, our vet told us to get doogles, they're called. They're called doggles or dog doogles. Yeah. And we would put them on him, and he looked hilarious.
Yeah, so cute.
But as soon as, like, we'd put them on him to keep the sun out. You know, you're supposed to protect the eye, keep the sun out. But that's when we carried him. But when we put him down, he wanted him off right away, so we would take him off. Dogs hate that shit. And Liz,
I feel that kind of way about the clothes. Like, a lot. Like, unless you have a Chihuahua.
Yeah.
In a very cold climate.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
But Liz and Jed, yes, that is an important issue, Liz and Jed, about the doggy clothes. And I'm glad you brought it up.
What if somebody put some fucking goggles on you and you couldn't take them off?
Yeah.
You'd be fucking pissed.
Right. And when dogs get basically when people are putting, you know, clothes on dogs, it's usually for a selfie on, you know, Instagram, or, you know, like, oh, look at my cute dog. And dogs hate that shit. But like you said,
of them, when they're cold, then it's like, all right, put a hoodie on me because I'm freezing, because you have me in a climate that doesn't. Plus, they've also been crossbred so many times. They're just this shivering rat. Furry, adorable little rat that you have that doesn't have a gross tail.
Yeah.
And so then you just put a sweater on it.
But Liz and Jed, what I would do, and this is my advice to you, when you see a dog who doesn't have a nice Argyle sweater or, you know, earmuffs, always carry with you
dog size blankets.
No, I wasn't going to say that. Always carry with you a mug of hot cocoa. Okay, and you'll be that Saint Bernard to that dog. Just give that dog and a little bowl, a portable bowl, a mug of hot cocoa and a portable bowl. Because I know, so you guys live in San Francisco, and I know San Francisco gets very chilly. That wind whips in that city.
I thought chocolate killed dogs.
Not cocoa. Hot apple cider. Hot apple cider. Scratch the cocoa. Jesus,
that was the greatest... Kill the fucking dog.
All right. This next one. This guy tells me to take it easy on you. Hold on. All right. Here we go.
Hey, Eddie. Really disappointed to get your voicemail again. I was hoping you were going to pick up this time. I was hoping to talk to you. Oh, anyway. Just take it easy on Steve now that he's back, please. Will you? He probably hasn't been late since Florida and the accident.
Oh, yeah, talk about that.
So just please take it easy on Steve. Change nothing about the show. Keep your same lovable, bitter Buddha ways about you. God bless.
God bless.
And Godspeed.
Hey, man. I like that guy.
And God.
And God.
And God at the end. And he didn't leave his name, but thank you very much, sir. Or madam. No, sir. That was a sir. That was great. That was a great little message. And of course, yeah, you know, Steve is my sidekick. And I realized that that call in from my friend was inappropriate. And we talked about it.
Yeah.
Think we're better for it. But what was the other thing?
He wanted to get a hold of you. He said, I really wish I could have got a hold of
he
you.
He sounded sarcastic, though.
No,
too.
I don't think so.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I think he was.
But isn't this the phone call to leave a message?
Yeah,
the
these are just, by the way, sir, which I don't feel comfortable calling you. You're like a Nick or Fred or Bobby or Steve or Alan.
Tito.
But yeah, it's just a voicemail thing and that we play. Yeah, so that's, you know, I don't pick this thing up. I don't even pick up my real phone. I don't like
Not
to.
Often, no.
Not often. Not often. But all right, so we did the couple phone calls that we got this week.
Yeah, I haven't been late since the accident.
So, you, no, nothing
Wait,
on
you
the
didn't
road.
Get any
I could have. I could have. I just didn't. Did you see the pictures, by the way? I sent you the pictures. I had all these pictures, like mildly erotic pictures with these chicks after the show. That took pictures with me. And
you didn't close?
You know, I could have done some skeevy shit where I was like, hey, let's go take a walk. That's what I used to do. Let's go take a walk because they're ready to go after the show. But I didn't do that. I didn't push it. I was just, you know, I was happy. I had good shows. I got paid. Everything went well. And I got pictures with these hot girls. And I even slept with a girl in my hotel room bed. I didn't have sex with her. No, I didn't have sex with her.
What was that about? Because that sounds like more than...
She was really emotional about needing a like deeper connection thing. And I knew that if I did it, it would have been bad for both of us. Who knows, you know, what would have happened. And it would have been... I would have had to kind of... I don't think she really wanted to. I think she just wanted to sleep in the bed with me. Mm-hmm. So...
Just human contact, not necessarily.
And that was good, by the way.
Yeah, for
that
sure.
was good. For a guy who hasn't been laid since the accident, that was great. Just to have a woman, you know, scantily clad next to you was great.
That'd be funny if that's your progression. Like, I don't have sex with people, but I do sleep with people. What do you mean?
That's a thing. There's like cuddle services in Japan where you can like where men will pay. It's like a cuddle prostitute, if you will. Like you just
now that money. Really is sad to be in the sense. And the reason why? No, I'll tell you why. Is because. That is indicative of the fact that we don't
get enough human contact.
We don't get enough human contact.
There's
we need to hug each other more. Folks.
I hug people all the time.
She gave me a big hug after our show, actually.
Yeah. We met in a stranger's backyard.
That's right.
We did a show together.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Where was that?
It was like in Long Beach or something like that.
Long Beach is a place to hug.
Mm-hmm.
But hug each other for Matt Rasamoto.
Hug.
Rat Masamoto.
You said rat.
Rat? Is he a rat?
You said rat.
Is he ratted on you?
Matt Rasamoto. He lives in Long Beach, I believe.
Close by there, yeah.
Close by. We're not going to give you the exact locale.
I think I invited him to that show, and he couldn't make it. He had like plans with his wife or something.
Steve.
Yeah. He didn't want to bring her out on his date night to someone's backyard.
I love that show.
I want to get to – give me – I don't know if you can, Steve, but give me a couple of – you know, takeaways from you were gone for a month.
Yeah.
You did a bunch of shows on the road. I know from doing the road that, you know, it's so interesting. It's hard when you're doing it. It's challenging on all kinds of levels. But when you're back, you kind of feel like, I don't know. I always feel like, I grew a little from that.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and you get, like we talked about a little bit before we got on air, it's usually like a little bit of everything. Really good, really bad, in between.
You know what? This one ended really good. And I think that's why it's good, because it ended really good. And I also, just a couple of things. First of all, I played a much younger audience. Like when I go on the road, a lot of times it's older white people in these towns like Lakeland, Florida. And it's old white people. And this one was, I was near colleges.
I've done that gig in Lakeland.
I'll bet you have. You know, I sell a lot of DVDs to the older, this is the interesting thing. The younger people they had no money to buy my DVDs.
That's the state of America.
That is very telling. And I was even in the last city I did, Jacksonville, I was in a very hip room. And this was really cool because I got booked in this place and I found out later on, they put me up in the Hilton. They took really good care of me. They paid me well and they treated me like gold. The audience was great and it was a tiny little intimate club, you know. And
you want to name it?
Yeah, it's the Laugh Lounge in Jacksonville. If you happen to be in Jacksonville, they have a show every week, the Laugh Lounge, downtown Jacksonville. But what was interesting was, they had never had an out-of-town headliner. I was their first headliner from out-of-town. So I was like, I was kind of helping them. Mm-hmm. I never occurred to me that my name or my likeness could help a comedy club like get to the next.
Expand, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so they're like, hey, can you refer us to your comic friends? So they want headliners who I know when they come through that they can get work there. And it was cool, man. It was super cool. And anyway, but nobody had any money I didn't sell hardly any DVDs.
Yeah.
Because the younger. So I want to connect with a younger audience, right?
Download cards.
They don't have any fucking. They don't have any fucking.
Get download cards.
Download cards?
Yeah.
What's that?
She's talking about technology.
I know. What, download cards?
Yeah, they're download cards. You just have, it looks like a business card, but there's a code on it, and then they can download your album. And then you don't have to carry your, you can carry all your CDs around in a stack like this instead of, because
For the download card.
Yeah. Because it's just like, you know how when you just bought a book
but
on Audible?
But he's saying they weren't paying for anything.
Yeah, they didn't have any money
but
for
But nobody fucking buys DVDs anymore. Nobody buys
that
it.
That might help.
Because everybody streams everything now.
Yeah, that's
true. Just for instance, like you didn't buy that book you recently read. You paid $13 and streamed it on your iPad.
Right.
It's super, same thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I love to buy real books, though.
Yeah.
Me too.
And you sell albums. And I
do. Albums are great.
I like for people
LPs?
To be able to have...
Oh, dude, me too. You can sell the LP and you drop a download card in it, too, so they can have it. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a bunch of comics
Sweet.
That have done that. Yeah,
She's
so you can sell
clever.
An LP. I like to get the... I like when they do the special edition where they do, like, the two-color vinyl.
That's what
like,
I have.
Nice! That's badass.
I should bring that shit to Austin tomorrow, but...
You absolutely should. Those people buy merch. They were great. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
That audience is super rad. The Altercation Fest, by the way, is what we're talking about.
Yes, I'm doing tomorrow. I'll be in Austin at the Altercation Fest. So I'm looking forward to that. I do have to get up at 4:30 in the morning to make that gig. And I'm already uptight about that. No, because I don't do well in the morning. I'm shaking. Not, like early morning.
Well, that's early morning, bro.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sleep
that's early,
interrupted.
Early for real people.
That's
like
11 no real.
Is early,
that's
early
when
early
she
for
gets
me.
Home from work. When you're leaving for your flight is when she gets home from the comedy store.
Let me read one more ad, and then we'll continue our discussion. This is AAA Full Service. AAA Full Service, and by the way, I want to thank AAA, which didn't have to be part of this podcast, but AAA said we're gonna be, and these are written by Matt Rossomito, who lives near Long Beach, but not where you think he is. AAA Full Service. Let me tell you a little story. I did a 5-part miniseries for BBC Uganda. That's right. I did, and, you know, I hadn't been getting a lot of work in Hollywood. They didn't cast me for The Joker. What's the name of that movie with Joaquin Phoenix?
I don't know. Right, Joker 2, 3, 5, I don't know.
So I did a 5-part miniseries for BBC Uganda. It was the long-awaited sequel to the 1967 classic, The Prisoner. Do you remember The Prisoner?
Sure.
I played Patrick McGoohan's beloved character, Number 6. And a lot of actors, by the way, don't like to play numbers. Like, oh, you're number 2, you're number 1. I feel like if we're going to be depersonalized, then numbers. I'm fucking up the commercial. Let me go back. I played Patrick McGoohan's beloved character, Number 6. The rest of the cast were chimpanzees in suits. It was a low-budget production. Each day was 14 hours on set in 135-degree heat, where someone off-camera would scream, "Who is Number 1?" and throw feces at me. This would drive the chimpanzees absolutely mad. They would screech with delighted mania, and at the apex of their frenzy, they would literally drench the set in all sorts of bodily excreted molasses. At night, I would return to my trailer, in quotes, which was a concrete-floored chicken coop with no ceiling, and I would lay my head plastered with steamy chimp expulsion down on that burning concrete slab and weep a silent prayer begging for welcoming embrace of death. If you find yourself in a bad roadside situation, call AAA. Get a technician who is ready to serve your needs 24/7 with award-winning roadside service and customer care.
Wow.
Amen. Amen.
Amen. Amen. So,
triple amen.
Other road tidbits, and from the both of you, what the road?
Go ahead.
No, by all means.
Oh,
yeah. You just came back from it. Carmen's about to go on it.
I was like, I really want people to have a good time, and I noticed that they really want sex dick jokes on the road. They really love that. And I have to...
They love that everywhere, by the way.
Yeah, but...
Well, not really. You're right. Go ahead. Sex dick jokes.
I have to force myself to push the audience, to challenge them a little, so that I don't trap into that hacky...
Well, it's scary for a comedian because you think you're not going to get laughs if you don't do certain types of material.
Right. Do you ever have that?
I feel that.
Really?
Sure.
But see, I have a lot of material like that, so I can rely on it and I can lean on it. And I really had to force myself, especially the comics who went on before me, who set the tone. You know, the comics who open up for you set the tone.
And
you've got a lot of these road comics are, you know, they're new. They're not great. They're new. And they're doing the most desperate, you know. And so I'm going to go on and talk about, you know, that there's no counterculture.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so we got to find a good time to do that in between the dick and the pussy. Got to find a good, you know. So that was the challenge for me as artistically was to push the audience and also to make fun of where they live and that they're miserable.
Yes.
Which I did.
I always do that,
which
too.
I did.
And they love that.
That's fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
They and did. As long as they know that you're coming, that you're not, you know, this.
If they think that you're also miserable, right. They like you.
Right. Which I always.
And me too.
They know I am.
I was having the same thing because I was also in a more like right-leaning place, and I'm doing like these I have these empowering women jokes, and I talk about murdering men for like 20 minutes. So it's a hard sell. It's a hard sell when you're out for date night. You know what I mean? Where I'm like trying to be like, no, for real. Like we need to kill. And then, but so I always address it and address their feelings. Like that's what was always something that I really loved about Bill Burr is he would dismantle your argument before you even had it completely ready. You know what I mean? Before he even gets into the bit was something that I always like, I'd really admired about him is like, he would just be like, here's why. And before you start bitching at me, this and that, you know what I mean? And breaks it down. And like, I think using that kind of tool really helps people to, get them to listen. Yeah.
Attack them is what you're saying. Attack them immediately.
Or to be...
Lay it out why you think a certain way.
Yeah, for sure. Like, walk them through the logic, you know? And I think that helps, too, is when you have logic through it. Even if they don't agree with you, then they can be like, all right, well, I see where you're coming from, but you're still a psychopath or whatever, you know? And plus, I'm always a big fan of the sandwich, you know? That really severe chunk that you want to do, you wrap it around something not so severe.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, that's right, yeah. Or you just make it really funny, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You just make it funny. People laugh at funny stuff. And, yeah, but, you know, when I get in front of people, though, there's an instinct in me to tell them the truth and to, like, tell my truth. So sometimes I get in trouble with that because, you know, I don't want to, you know, I want to say something because it's a wild thing to be a stand-up if you really take the time to really be there and acknowledge what you're doing. You're in front. People are listening to you. It's like being
People are paying to listen to you.
They're paying to listen to you. It's like being a...
Sometimes it's a weeknight. Sometimes they're out on a fucking weeknight listening
That's
to
why
you.
The idea of a stand-up comedian is so hilarious because you have to be arrogant enough to think that the world should pay for you to exist. And not only exist, but exist well. You know?
Well, that's why we had George Carlin, Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor. You got to watch these genius gods do it. So you know that it happened. You know that these brilliant people happened, they moved you. So you know there's some template that you can try to reach, you know, was also great.
Well, that was what I always thought was so beautiful about it is like they had a narrative, a point of view, a philosophy. And there's comics who try to be philosophical who don't really have the actual shit to back it up. You know what I mean? Where they just try to talk about...
Or lazy thinking. There's a lot of comedians who proselytize, and it's just horrible shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like they're just not thought out.
Well, it's funny to watch a young comic who's new try to imitate something that's really great.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it all the time.
I can't tell you how many... There are so many Daniel Tosh ripoffs that have so many bar shows in this town.
Is that right?
Know? There's so many. I mean, a lot of people don't
even know what he fucking does, Daniel Tosh.
He is incredibly severe and masterful at it. He doesn't get enough credit he deserves, but he talks about horrific shit in the most funny, arrogant way I have ever seen. And a lot of people say there's a lot of Louis ripoffs, but I think it's more of it's more Daniel Tosh, because Daniel Tosh has that.
But Daniel
Tosh, I don't give a fuck.
He's easier to mimic than Louis.
Wait.
Like, it's easier to mimic. It's easier for a black comic to mimic Martin Lawrence than to mimic Richard Pryor.
Absolutely.
You understand what I'm saying? The beats and the cadences are easier to get than the nuances of an artist like mimicking. Watch a comic try to mimic Dave Chappelle, who's in their first or second year. It's fucking horrible.
I've seen it, dude. I've seen fucking young guys sitting on a stool. I'm like, you got 3 minutes. You're winded? Are you winded? What's next? You gonna hit the mic on your hip, huh? Because you're crushing so hard with your nothing behind the words you're saying?
Yeah. Are they actually taking Chappelle's routine or not really? Like, sometimes, I guess, but...
I'd like to see Eddie at the beginning. Are there any tapes of you at the...
Oh, dude, I was a fucking mess at the beginning.
Oh, dude.
Oh, I want to see it.
I was what I am now, but just a complete primal... Like
you didn't know how to package it.
I didn't really know how to package it, and it would just be this primal fucking scream, and it would be a primal scream alternating with just absolute fear.
Dude, if I showed you a tape, there's a tape of me from when I turned 21. I got my first paying gig at the Comedy Zone in Orlando, and you'd watch that tape. It would set you back 5 to 7 years. Just watching that tape. It's like,
it's funny that it would send anybody back.
Yeah.
You want to read our last one, Stevie?
Yeah.
This is the real sponsor. This is a real sponsor. This one is...
Oh, yeah. This is our one sponsor.
Ryder Duet.
We're not seeing any money from
Matt Rossomato. Yeah, we haven't seen any
Rossomato. Ryder Duet. And thank you, Matt Rossomato for...
He lives near the ocean. That's all we'll tell you.
Long Beach area. For Ryder Duet. Ryder Duet is online writing software for screenplays and scripts. I've been working on a screenplay about the life of famed baseball umpire C.V. Buckner. This has been a 14-year passion project for me, and at 3,200 pages before the trim down, let me say I've gone through my share of script writing tools. Many of you don't know this, but Final Draft poops out at 1,500 pages. I need software with stamina. Friends tell me all the time, anything over 1,000 pages isn't a script. It's a cry for help. Fuck them. This is C.B. Buckner we're talking about. The internet is full of new trends. And with Ryder Duet built-in collaboration tools, I can share my script with anyone. And maybe my rough draft has estranged some family members, and I might have blackened a few eyes, but a good script is fueled by passion. Let Ryder Duet capture your passion. Follow the link in the description.
Thank you. So we're going to wrap it up, Carmen. Do you want to promo anything? Twitter? Where are you going to be?
Sure.
Go ahead.
CarmenMorales.com for all of your Carmen Morales needs. Follow me on all the assorted social media at TheFunnyCarmen. If you enjoy not liking things, I have a really great podcast called No Sir, I Don't Like It. It's me and another comedian. We have guests on and we talk about things we don't like. And it's very fun. It's super fun. Also, I am going to be at the Capitol Theater in Madison, Wisconsin on October 19th, and at the Ordway Theater in St. Paul, Minnesota with Maria Bamford on the 20th.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Also be in Memphis this weekend at the Chuckle House.
The Chuckle House?
The Chuckles Comedy House in Memphis, Tennessee.
Don't they realize that those names are so lame at this point? Can't they change it to like something with a little fucking dignity? Right? The Chuckles House.
What's the one in Burbank? The one that...
Flapper.
Oh, that's Flappers. Just one of the worst names. Flapper sounds like
I don't like that name either, but it's a decent club. I like that club. And I like the owners.
And I'll bet the Chuckle House.
Carmen Morales, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
For being
so
here.
Fun.
That was great. And you were making some great points. And Steve, it's good to have you back.
I got some shows to promo.
Oh, that's right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Anaheim on the 28th of this month, September. So in a couple of days, Friday at StephenLolly.com. I don't know where. Go to StephenLolly.com. You'll see where I'm at in Anaheim. Fresno, I'm going to be headlining Strummers in Fresno on October 3rd. And then the Madhouse Comedy Club, 18th and 19th October.
Madhouse Comedy Club.
San Diego, California.
Why don't you tell everybody where you're going to be?
In San Diego. Look, I don't want to brag, but I'm going to be at the Altercation Festival in Austin tomorrow night, which is Thursday the 27th. And then I'm going to be – my other book gig is October 19 and 20 in Fargo, North Dakota at the Front Street Tap Room. Please come to that if you're in Fargo. I can't imagine what else you're going to do. All right. All right. Well, this was a good one.
Yeah, I had a great time. Thanks for having me.
It was a good one.
And thank you guys in Facebook land and SoundCloud land for watching and listening. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.